And again, Monday morning to you, and welcome into Darren, Donick, and Chase here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Hope everybody had a sensational weekend. Weather was fantastic. How could you not have had a great weekend? Other than there's a lot of local teams that weren't playing. We know the UT game against A&M was canceled, or I'm sorry, postponed. Other conferences, they get canceled. SEC, they get postponed. Titans, of course, played on Thursday night. They'll be back at it against the team that was playing last night in a very, very rainy Foxborough. We got a lot of things to get into today. Darren McFarland here down here in Rutherford County in Smyrna. Willie Donick is hanging over in East Nashville. Chase McCabe will join us a little bit later in the program while Elijah Campbell is back at our Wholesale Link Game Studios. Willie, how you doing?
I am all right. It is a beautiful fall day. That's a good thing. And ready to get after it today.
Mike Vrabel will talk at 10:30. We're actually going to talk to Danny Evans here in about 10, 12 minutes or so. Talk about the Marlins' new hire and a guy that we've had a relationship with for a long time over the years. But interesting hire in Major League Baseball. We'll talk to him about that. It's been a while since we've talked to Danny. And like I said, at the bottom of the hour, we'll hear from Mike Vrabel. We'll get the reaction from that presser as we talk with TD in the second hour. We'll head east and bring in Vince Ferrara in the third hour like we do on Mondays. As not a good look, as we discussed on Friday's show, with eight coaches declining a pay cut. So we got a ton of things to get into, including that game last night in a very, very rainy Foxborough. And got to be honest, it's strange because right now we know there's expanded format and seven teams are getting in each conference. And right now a 5-0 Titans team is now 6-3, and they're currently out of the playoff picture. They're out of the playoffs right now, which is hard to believe. I think they're the 9 seed right now in the AFC. And I saw a stat yesterday on Twitter that said, I think it was maybe ESPN Stats and Info. I'm not sure exactly where I saw it. If I could remember, I would definitely give them credit. But there are the number of teams in the AFC that have six or more wins after Week 10 is the first time it's ever happened. Since they've had the AFC-NFC split, which was what, early 70s?
Right.
It's the first time they've ever had this many teams with six or more wins in a conference after Week 10, and that is the case in the AFC. Like I said, the Titans were a 5-0 team. They're now 6-3, and they're currently, if the playoffs started this weekend, they would be out of the playoffs with an expanded format in the NFL.
That is really interesting. And you hit the point. There's an extra spot there. And so you would think that would make it easier to get in. And you think of a lot of years. And, of course, the Titans, as it's well known, have had four straight 9-7 seasons. And through the years, I think it's been pretty consistent. 9-7 usually is about 50-50 to get you in, right? I'd love to know exactly what it is. So you would think 9-7 would more likely get you in this year, but I'm not sure that's going to be the case. Like, I would have assumed there'd be at least one 9-7 get in. That might still be the case, right? There's still a lot of division games and a lot of head-to-head to go, so it could shake itself out and come back. But yeah, I guess you got to keep your head down and keep winning, right? That's all you can do. You can't worry about that right now. You can't sit there and panic because you're out of the playoffs. But you're right. It is interesting how many contenders there are. This is different than most years, for sure.
The next three opponents, to what you just said, yeah, you can change that picture completely because the Ravens have six wins, the Colts have six wins, and the Browns have six wins. They all have, and the Titans, they all have the same record, and that's the next three opponents for the Titans.
Nothing easy about it. And, of course, you never can tell. Right, of course, the weather had something to do with it, maybe last night. But the Patriots pretty much led wire to wire against the Ravens. The Ravens made it close, but the Patriots, dare I say, had control of the game most of the night.
Well, the Ravens went down and scored right out of the gate. I mean, first drive, boom, 7-0. It was like, this is going to be a walk in the park.
Yeah. And then
the
it
Patriots
was
came
but.
Right back and scored, and that was basically it.
Once they took control.
Lead. Yep. Yeah. They took control the rest of the way.
So it's just, it is a hard league to figure out. Just when you think you've got a team figured out, something happens. And that's why I think you have to stay hopeful if you're the Titans, even though it hasn't looked good the last few weeks. And it has been noted, and I think it's a fair criticism, that it's the same things that have become weaknesses, and you're worried, can they fix those, right? Because once it's been a weakness for so long, it's not just a, well, they'll get it fixed. It's got to be a legit concern. But you look at teams who turn it around. It happens every year, right? Crazy stuff happens, and there's no crazier year than this year. So you just hope they can keep playing and find a way to improve, because I think we've come to watch this league long enough to know that you just don't know what's around the corner. That's what makes it so fun with the whole parity. There's upside about having the parity system that they have. There's also a downside, but the upside is it is very unpredictable at times.
I'm sure everybody in the city of Houston yesterday was hoping that at the end of the Arizona-Buffalo game that Bill O'Brien was watching, just so they could probably all say together, see, Bill, that's why you got fired. That's why you got fired. What a crazy finish as Kyler Murray throws a 43-yard Hail Mary touchdown pass to DeAndre Hopkins, triple covered, and Arizona wins 32-30. Of course, they didn't kick the extra point or go for two. They just took a knee because there were still 2 seconds left. And they win 32-30. And I'm sure everybody in Houston was going, I hope Bill O'Brien was watching that. And that's why you're fired, and that's why you don't have a job right now.
What an amazing play that was on so many levels, and just a crazy game. And as you said, you just got done talking about the AFC picture. That changed the AFC picture a little bit.
Well, that helped. Yes.
That helped the Titans.
You know, time.
As you're saying, the Titans, it looks a little shaky right now because they're outside. They're below the line, if you will, but that helped because they do have the head-to-head over the Bills, and if the Bills win that game, which it certainly looked like they were going to win, that would not have been a good thing. You'd had to be really – but now you're looking at the Bills saying maybe it's not a given that they win that division, and if they're in the wild card, that's a good thing because the Titans have a head-to-head against them. But what an incredible play. I don't know if I've ever seen a guy catch a ball that easily with three guys around him. Like, when there are three guys around you, you just don't expect anybody to catch the ball cleanly. But he just snatched it. There were six arms around him, and nobody could even come close to wrestle it out of his hand. He caught it clean.
I don't think anybody touched the ball other than him. Didn't look like it.
Yeah.
Which was hard to believe.
Yeah, you just don't see that. You don't see that. But he's a special player, as we know, and so is the guy that threw it. I mean, remember the Doug Flutie throw years ago in the Orange Bowl, which my little brother was actually at that game. I don't know if he was paying full attention because it was a rainy day and it was crazy down in the Orange Bowl. But, you know, Flutie runs around for a while and then heaves it. He was further back, but he also got more of a running start. Like, Kyler Murray is running more laterally. He's got to get out of the way of a guy that's trying to tackle him first. He's running almost full speed. He does get a couple of steps to start moving forward. But he threw that ball 50 yards or more.
Going to his left, by the way.
Going to his left and throwing back.
Going to your left.
Yeah, and he's throwing it back against the grain, and he's falling out of bounds, and another guy's barreling down on him too. So to get that ball where he did, that was an amazing thing. And when you watch this guy, and Darren, I know you've watched him a lot because you drafted him in the fantasy league. But
that won me the fantasy week. I have DeAndre Hopkins, Kyler Murray, and no kidding, go look. You can see it won me the week. I won by 1.5 points, and that is the reason I won, that play.
But you talk about a guy that is fun to watch, whether you have him on your fantasy team or not. That guy is fun to watch. He just makes stuff happen, and he's only
really
going to get better.
By the way, how is he not in the MVP discussion?
Well,
he's got 10 touchdowns. 10.
You're saying running?
Yes.
Yeah, running. Yeah.
He's got running, and he's going to pass for, you know, I don't know, what's he going to pass for? 4,000 yards and rush for 1,000? I mean, and have, I don't know, 14 rushing touchdowns. How's that guy not in the MVP talk? I didn't say he's going to win it, but how is he not in the discussion? I mean, look at his numbers. It's sick.
Well, I feel like if they win a couple more, because you know what happens, and we're very familiar with it in this city, right? The word doesn't quite get out early on the Cardinals. The Cardinals just aren't a team that get a lot of attention. You have to really earn it. You have to do it for a while before people really start noticing. I think Kyler Murray is probably there, right? If he was playing for the Giants, they would have hyped him up. If he were doing these things every week for New York, I think it would be a different story. Would you agree with that? I think it's this now coming around. They don't get the national spotlight very often, but man, yesterday was eye-opening. Would you buy that? I feel like there's more hype coming for Kyler Murray.
I think there's a reason that Arizona and Buffalo was on yesterday. I think he's starting to get – and, oh, by the way, look at what's this Thursday's game. Arizona-Seattle. I mean, I think it's there. Do I think more is coming? Yes, I do. I mean, he's passed for over 2,300 yards. He's got 17 passing touchdowns, 8 interceptions. And I'm trying to find his rushing stats just to – do you have his rushing stats right in front of you? I know it's 10 touchdowns because he scored yesterday and they said it.
It'll take me a second to pull it up. But, man, I'll tell you, with that and with the Dolphins winning the way they are and the decision that they made – at the time that they did to switch quarterbacks, they look like geniuses right now. And they look every bit the part of a team that could find a way to win that division. And then, of course, you've got the Patriots still hanging around and winning a couple of games here to get back into the chase. And they seem to be starting to find a formula that can get better. So Kyler Murray, 68% of his completion rate, 17 touchdowns and 8 interceptions, 98 rating, and rushing, he's got 604 yards rushing.
604? He's got, what, 6 games left?
Yeah, so he's
got 7 games left?
He's got an outside shot at getting 1,000 yards rushing. It would not be impossible for him to do that.
He's getting about 7 yards a carry, too.
Yeah, so 7 yards, it's going to come down to how many times he tucks it and runs it.
I thought Buffalo did a really good job. I watched that game. I was going back and forth, Steelers, Bengals, Bills. I mean, just back and forth. And I thought Buffalo actually did a good job of containing him. He only finished with 61 yards rushing, and I thought they did a really good job. But he's hard. I think there's a real shot he rushes for 1,000 yards and, I don't know, 14 touchdowns rushing. And then, like I said, passing, if he gets close to 4,000 and let's say 25 touchdowns and 12 interceptions, isn't that's worthy of MVP discussion, is it not?
I think it's worthy of MVP discussion. The problem is there's so many other guys that are in the discussion, right? It's not going to be
although Russell
him
Wilson
alone.
The last couple of weeks starting to take a toll. Maybe it's starting to feel like I've been comparing him to the Titans for weeks now.
Yep.
I've been saying Seattle and Tennessee mirror each other, and look, maybe the defenses or lack of in both situations is starting to affect quarterback play because Tannehill hasn't been great the last several games. Russell Wilson hasn't been great the last couple of games. And you do wonder with the defense both defenses never getting off the field, you know, how has that affected those quarterbacks? All right, we can step away. We'll come back. Former MLB GM Danny Evans, and then we'll have Mike Vrabel at the bottom of the hour. On the other side, Darren Donica Chase, ESPN 102.5 The Game. Darren Donick and Chase brought to you by Blue Note Juke Joints. Smoother than smooth here on this Monday morning. Darren McFarland and Willie Donick here with you. A guy that we always enjoyed our chats with when he used to join us weekly. Man, we had so much fun with our next guest, former MLB general manager of the Dodgers. And he's been an agent. He has been in the front office. He has done it all when it comes to Major League Baseball. And he's a guy, as Willie and I talked about on Friday's show, it was talking about this person years ago And sure enough, she gets hired by the Marlins as their next general manager. Danny Evans is on the line with us. Danny, how you doing?
I'm doing exceptionally well. I'm watching my protege and her press conference, and there's so much just pure joy watching this all happen in front of my eyes.
How did you see something that, you know, at the time when you brought it up, we had no idea who you were talking about? Just kind of go back and, you know, tell us how that all came about and how you knew that someday this day would come.
Well, first of all, it's great to talk to a couple old friends here.
It's great to catch up with Danny here.
You know, the thing is, I hired her as an intern, fresh out of the University of Chicago, before the 1991 season. And we interviewed over 100 people, and it was really funny. When she showed up, I had my three-month-old daughter in the office, sound asleep in a Graco playpen, so we had to go do the interview in a different area. And that was my first interaction with Kim, and we laughed about it this weekend because, you know, it's just, you look back at where she was, and she was a spirited, inquisitive, really fun interview, and made it clear that she would come in and make an immediate contribution as an intern. And listen, we've all hired interns. People sometimes say the right things. I'm a former intern, and I just heard the confidence, but I also love the fact that I had this young woman sitting across from me who just seemed to know that she could do it. And honestly, guys, within the first, I'd say 2-3 weeks, I knew we had a superstar. I had a lot of pushback. There was a lot of stigma within the game. And it was something that I felt almost all the time. I can only imagine what she felt. But this brilliant young executive worked with me for 7 years. And then 4 years later, I become the GM of the Dodgers. And I was looking for leaders and for winners to help turn our situation around. And that 21-year-old baby-faced intern was suddenly a three-time world champion and an enormously talented immediate contributor. And I hired her as the assistant GM vice president of the Dodgers. And she oversaw player development and scouting. And the rest of the story is just awesome. So I'm lucky, guys. I get to hire her twice. And I get to call her a really great friend of 30 years.
Gosh, I'm so jealous. I mean, everybody looked at me at 21 years of age and said, what a dope. This guy's going nowhere. And you were blown, you know, you were blown away at 21. That you are leaving quite the impression at that age. So what challenges face her now that she's been through all this and now she's getting this opportunity? What challenges are ahead, Danny?
Well, Darren, I said this on Friday when she was hired. She is the most prepared and most qualified person to take over a general manager's job as a first-time GM in the last 15 years. So she's ready for the job. A lot of people are focusing on her gender, but I'm celebrating the fact that her skill set's being rewarded for the first time. She's been enormously talented. 3 world championships, 3 great organizations, works with Major League Baseball for an extended period, has a network and an interpersonal skills set that are unparalleled in the game. And so I think immediately, you know, I mean, I've done that job. And when you walk into that job the first day, you're never quite as ready as you'd like to be. But she's got a chance to hit the ground the moment she starts today with a network and a strategy and experience that's unrivaled. It's almost a blessing that people in the game were hesitant to not hire her as the first female GM, because now she's so prepared. She's got a real good club with a great farm system, a nucleus, a new ballpark, and guys, she's got people around her in management positions that she's worked with and won with. And I think that gives her a platform to succeed from the moment she starts. And that's what I'm really excited about. She's not inheriting a decrepit franchise, having to prove herself. She's already proven herself with the people around her, the owner, the CEO, the minor league people, and the manager have worked with her and won with her. That's a huge platform to initiate from.
We're talking to Dandy Evans, former general manager of the Dodgers, and, of course, a longtime contributor to Sports Talk Radio in Nashville. We've been really excited to make the connection with Dan over the years. And I can remember when Dan was with the White Sox, and it was probably just a couple of years after he hired Kim Ng at Greer Stadium with Ron Shuler and Nick the Stick Hunter. And Darren, you remember it well. We had a lot of – so, Dan, you were the first person that I thought of when the hire was made. I just – the light bulb went on because I can remember you talking about Kim. You know, and this was probably a decade ago, easily, right? Mm-hmm. And so I was so glad that you got some recognition. I read the article in The Athletic from Ken Rosenthal about your part in advancing her cause. So congratulations on being able to do this. And it does kind of make it, you know, you said, overqualified, right? It's probably, because you were saying this so long ago, she's had to be so patient to get this assignment, right? And so she easily could have given up somewhere along the way.
Yeah, and you know what? That's one of her best character traits, her perseverance, her patience, her professionalism, and you know, I've never walked in her shoes. I don't know what it's like to be, you know, this brilliant female executive who happens to be so qualified yet can't land those opportunities. And, you know, for a while I was, you know, I've always been a supporter of hers and I've always been in her ear, don't give up, don't back off. But her mom and her husband, Tony, are her rocks. They are the people in her life. They wouldn't let her ever consider not being that person. And guys, you know, here's the thing. For an entire generation of young girls and young women who aspire to be in baseball, suddenly they have somebody who looks like them. And mm-hmm. on top of it, she's an Asian American woman. She's crossing so many barriers, shattering so many glass ceilings, but the best part about it is the perseverance not only paid off for her, but it pays off for the game because there's no better person to be that pioneer than her. She is universally respected, but more importantly, she is universally loved within the baseball community. She's going to have a lot of people pulling for her. I talked to her a couple times over the weekend. She had over 1,000 text messages, a whole bunch of emails, phone calls. And I explained to her, I said, there are so many people pulling for you, celebrating you. And she's so deserving of that, of those accolades and of that love that she's getting today.
Danny, I know you're probably going to want to watch this press conference that's going on, but leave us with this. You told a great story in the article to Ken Rosenthal. It's not a coincidence that it's the Marlins that hire her. Tell us about her connection with Derek Jeter.
Well, she left me in the White Sox, and I encouraged her to go to the American League office to work in Major League Baseball and really just learn how 29 other teams were doing business. And then she eventually jumped to the Yankees as their assistant GM at 29. Well, they win 3 World Series. And during that period, Derek Jeter is surfacing as the future Hall of Famer, the future captain of the club. And Jeter really took a liking to Kim, as did so many people within the Yankee organization, Brian Cashman, you know, people like Joe Torre, who just really respected the heck out of her. Well, they had an off day, and the team was in Texas. Kim was being honored at a banquet in New York City, and Jeter surprised her by flying back on a private jet on the off day to come present her at an awards luncheon as the female executive of the year in the New York City area. And Kim had told me about it that day, called me that afternoon, couldn't believe it. And Jeter just wanted to be a part of it. Jeter was 3 or 4 years into the big leagues, but she had already made that kind of impression on him. And when this position came up, I kept my fingers crossed. I didn't want to jinx her, but all I kept thinking was this might be the opportunity with Mattingly, with Jeter there. It might be the opportunity that she so long deserved. And, you know, Derek had already made a statement 20 plus years ago of how he felt about her. He certainly made a statement on Friday morning.
Danny, what do you think Nick Hunter would say about this hire?
Well, he loved her. We spent many a day together, and I think Nick Hunter would have been one of the happiest people in North America. He would pester her with comments and questions, always having them. I know that's hard to believe, guys, but knew that she would never BS him ever. So she would sometimes not have the company line, not have the party line, and Nick would give us a hard time and say, oh, I don't know, somebody might not be agreeing with you on this one. And but I think he'd be thrilled, because one thing we know, Nick Hunter knew talent. And knew talent as well as anybody the three of us have ever interacted. And after his first interaction with Kim, he said to me, boy, you're right, she's really, really special. So, you know, there's a lot of people who went into her career. I'm just really proud to be one of them.
I miss those baseball talks every week with him, and we certainly miss talking with you over the years, but we've certainly appreciated your insight, and we know that you're still in the area. I told you I've been listening to you. We know you've been joining George Plaster, so we've been listening to you, so we're glad you're still on in Nashville. It's good to hear your voice, and you continue the good work, Danny, and we'll talk to you down the road.
I appreciate it. And, Willie, I'm thrilled for what's gone on with you at the Predators. You know I root for the Blackhawks, but there's about 73 games a year, 74 games a year I root for you. So, you know, just keep doing a great job. And to both of you, it's wonderful to reconnect with you, too.
Yeah, same here. Same here. Danny, thank you for the nice words.
You got it, guys. Bye.
All right, that is Danny Evans. You just heard it right there. She's having her introductory press conference right now for the Marlins. And there's the man who discovered her at 21 years of age.
How about that?
And like I said,
and if you haven't,
you have to leave quite the impression to get somebody's attention that knows the game like Danny at 21 years old. Man, you must be really sharp. Clearly she is, and now she's finally getting an opportunity that she's well-deserved.
So a great Nashville connection, thanks to our great relationship with the late Nick Hunter. You know, we have a little secondary part in this, but if you want to read more about the story, the first ever female general manager in Major League Sports, right? Not just Major League Baseball, but Major League Sports, Kim Ang, go to The Athletic if you subscribe and read Kenny Rosenthal's article. Danny is quoted heavily in there. You'll hear more background of how they discovered Kim. And, of course, there's dozens and dozens of great articles all over the place because this is a big story. This is beyond a sports story, this hiring by the Marlins. Great stuff.
Danny has done it all. He's been, as you heard, the Dodgers general manager. He's been a scout. He's been an agent. He's basically covered every facet of the game and been around it his whole life. And the man is well connected. And as you just said, man, he can talk the game. We could have gone on. I would have loved to get his opinion on, you know, really where is Nashville in the big picture of Major League Baseball. We just didn't have the time. He actually was extremely busy today and made time to do this. As I said, he probably wanted to watch this press conference that's going on right now for the Marlins, as this is a big, big sports story. But we'll come back. We will hear from Titans head coach Mike Vrabel on the other side. Darren Donick and Chase, ESPN 102.5 The Game. All right, let's head over to the Titans facility, St. Thomas Sports Park, and hear from the head coach Mike Vrabel. This is brought to you by Pella Windows and Doors of Nashville. Here's the head coach.
And we need to improve. We need to focus on us today, and then continue to improve and get on to Baltimore.
Joe,
Mike, I guess how much time have you spent maybe self scouting? How much time have you spent maybe looking at the Ravens and what's coming up?
Well, I mean, we've taken a look at what we've done, and you know, the things that we, you know, have been consistent at, and the things that we've need to improve on. And there's, you know, a lot of those things, but, you know, it hasn't, you know, I think we've taken a good look at ourselves, and hopefully, you know, as we finish up with the players today, then we'll be able to look at Baltimore, I would say, extensively.
John Gunner.
Mike, plan this week to stick with Steven as your kicker, or is there a plan for a new kicker?
You know, I mean, as of today, right now, you know, we have one on the practice squad. You know, we've got, you know, DeVecchio on the practice squad who's kicking. You know, but as of Monday at 10:36, you know, Steven would be our kicker as of right now.
Gotcha. And then on Adam, any progress there? Has he had a concussion protocol yet?
Well, not as of yet.
Toronto?
Yeah, Coach, when you get the team back together and you get in front of them and talk to them, what was the first thing that you said to them? What do you want to be the dominant message or understanding as you guys try to spin this forward?
You know, I think we have to be excited about coming to work. We have to, you know, understand that these games – you know, they're tight, man. You guys see all these games in the National Football League, you know, 17-10 and, you know, at the end of the half and let them, you know, clock it and kick a field goal after a sack, you know, get a goal line stop, can't convert second and one, third and one, you know, poor protection, poor punt, you know, can't hold them to a field goal. You know, then give up the, you know, three and out and a block punt, you know, come back down, penalty, takes us out of first and goal. And it's just so tight. It's similar to the game, you know, I mean, it looked like the game with the Colts last year. It's a tight game. You know, we block a field goal, we score, able to take, you know, advantage of that football game last year. So, you know, there's a lot of things that are positive, but unfortunately there's just too many things that didn't go our, you know, we didn't execute well enough. So we got to be excited about coming back to work, being in the middle of, you know, the season, you know, where we are, giving ourselves a chance, and being ready to get back to work.
And then as you get ready to – you're going to have two out of three very critical road games, that pack and play, the rushing attack. How critical is it for you guys to be able to get on point with that, and even to have guys like Foreman and McNichols mixed in as well?
Well, man, again, that's been a strength of ours. It's going to have to continue to be a strength. You know, I can't concentrate or focus on two out of three or whatever you were alluding to, but, you know, I know we're going to go on the road this week to Baltimore. You know, excellent football team, physical football team, and you know, we're going to have to be, you know, at our best in all areas.
Steve Lehman.
Hey, Mike, over the last four games, your average distance to get on third down has gone up from third and five to third and seven, and maybe not surprisingly, you've had nearly triple the amount of three and outs on offense as you had early in the season. Is there anything that you've been able to identify that has set yourself up for those types of situations and the lack of success on third down?
Well, I mean, the longer you need, the probably the percentages are going to go down. You know, I think continuing to, you know, limit the negative yard plays, penalties always play, you know, a large factor in that. You know, just being sound and efficient on first and second down, you know, so where everybody, you know, regardless of what we call, you know, being able to execute, and then, you know, if it's a pass and there's nothing there down the field, then, you know, the protection's got to be able to hold up for the quarterback to progress and, you know, check it down or get it out of his hand. If we run the football, you know, we expect to when it's a little dirty or muddy, to be able to put our head down or put our foot in the ground and, you know, get a couple yards so it's not second and 11.
You had some similar struggles on the third and long. They were third and much longer early last season. And I know the focus was negative plays and no more penalties there too. Is it as simple as that, or how were you able to fix it a year ago so effectively?
I mean, we probably played better. Yeah, I would say we probably cleaned some of those things up and emphasized it.
Joe?
Hey, Mike, wondering how you thought Clowney played Thursday and how you feel about that group here moving forward, the outside linebacker group.
JD had some plays that were, you know, good, disruptive, and I'm sure there's some plays he'd like to have back. He didn't play well enough for us to win like everybody else, nor did we coach well enough for us to win. You know, their group going forward, you know, we've got three guys on the active roster and then two guys on the practice squad. So we'll evaluate those guys, you know, each week and try to figure out where those pieces can help us.
Paul?
Mike, do you need starter help on special teams in some of the places where you've shown weaknesses the last couple weeks?
I mean, I think that that's something that, you know, we certainly want to talk about. You know, that was mentioned this morning. You know, I think we have to have all hands on deck. You know, it's something that, you know, I try to not ask guys, having played, I try to not ask them to do things that I wasn't asked to do. I know we have some guys that have some snap counts that are getting up there, but if we need that, you know, that's always something that we should be able to do.
Is that a disappointment that some of your guys who are supposed to be good on special teams aren't good enough, that you might need to call on people who don't generally need to do that?
No, not disappointing. No, just trying to do whatever we can do to help us win.
Buck?
Hey, Mike. I'm sure this is the case for many teams, but Baltimore seems to be a great deal different when they're playing with a lead as opposed to when they're trailing. Is there anything that about their style of play that kind of lends itself to that notion?
Yeah, I mean, they can pound the ball. The quarterback, you know what I mean? You've got a bunch of guys that can run with it. The quarterback's an extra option. You know, when you start to talk about that, you know, there's a lot of things that you have to defend. You know, and then the play action game comes up and, you know, they get guys, you know, running free because everybody's up there playing the run. And not only that, but then defensively they can blitz you and rush the passer and disrupt the passer. So, you know, that's always a good method is to play from the lead, and, you know, their strengths become, you know, pretty dominant.
Terry?
Hey, Mike. Sorry, didn't have the glitch that we did on Friday. That's good. In terms of, I guess this kind of goes maybe a little bit hand in hand with Steve Lehman's question, but time of possession, you guys are 29th in the league. Is that something that has to improve in order to keep the defense rested and to keep the offense running more smoothly?
Well, we have to continue to finish drives. You know, we got to get off the field on third down. I think that's a lot of it. You know, I think that, you know, sometimes can be a little misleading. But, you know, I think when you're talking about staying fresh, obviously you want to play complimentary and possess the football. But we have to be able to keep them out of the end zone, get off the field on third down and finish drives. You know, and if we're scoring quickly, you know, that's one thing. But we can't just take the ball three plays and punt it. So hopefully we can, you know, if we have to give it back to the defense, we're giving it back to them after some points.
Paul?
This team's done very well with extra time, Mike. What is it about what you've been able to unearth, given a couple extra days, that's led to success in the past?
You know, I don't know, Paul. I mean, a lot of it right now in this time of the season is about rest. You know, there's some guys that are banged up that are competing, that are fighting. And it's a lot of it is about rest probably at this point in time, which we were able to give them. Going to focus very, very hard on fundamentals and technique today, from an individual standpoint of things that, you know, they're watching and we're looking at them with right now. That's kind of happened over the first half of the season, and go out and rep those in an individual setting, a group setting, and special teams.
Two more, Terry.
Mike, with all the moving parts and the changing out of players on special teams, especially long snappers, punters, do you feel that in any way has adversely affected the performance of the unit and their cohesion?
You know, Terry, we're all professionals. We all have a job to do. We're all expected to do the job, and that's, you know, sometimes there's moving parts for a lot of different reasons. But I'm hopeful that's why we practice, and you know, we can continue to all work together, and everybody can do our job, and they can, you know, protect those guys when they have to kick. They got to cover them, tackle, and then, you know, give us a chance in the return phases.
Jim?
And, Mike, you kind of touched on it a minute ago on the health situation, but how much should the extra time give you a chance to get some guys back, whether it's Adoree, Michael, maybe even some guys on the injured list, Christian, Darrington Evans, or any of those guys getting closer?
I mean, I think they're all getting closer, but, you know, again, time will tell. I think they're all working hard to get back. You know, and then we'll have to evaluate them if they're able to practice. And that's where it starts, is they can do some stuff today. We'll see how they look. We'll see how they respond to that, you know, work, and then and keep moving towards, you know, a decision later in the week.
All right, there you go. That's head coach Mike Vrabel talking about a little time off for them as now they start getting prepared for the Baltimore Ravens this week. And that was brought to you by Pella Windows and Doors of Nashville. Right now, I want to talk to you about DraftKings. And, boy, what a weekend it was. All the pro and college football and the major golf tournament, they gave you an opportunity to be risk-free at $100. Good weekend for me. I'm just going to put that out there. Really enjoyed all the action over the weekend. Had a good time. And they are constantly at DraftKings giving you an opportunity to get involved too. Using that promo code 1025GAME, using that promo code 1025TheGame, always having opportunities for you, and with odds boosts and promotions, you need to check them out. It's for a limited time. DraftKings Sportsbook app, all you have to do is download it. It's free and easy to do. They want you in the center of all the action. Another Monday night game again tonight, and all you have to do is download the top-rated DraftKings Sportsbook app right now and use the promo code 1025TheGame. You must be 21 years of age or older, Tennessee only, risk-free coverage, paid out on site. Credits restrictions do apply. See DraftKings.com/sportsbook for details. If you or someone you know has a gambling problem and needs help, you can call or text the Tennessee Red Line at 1-800-889-9789. Back around Darren Donick and Chase. We'll talk with TD to start the second hour of the program. Chase will join us a little bit later as well. We'll head east at high noon. Talk about the Vols. Another postponement in the SEC. Artie coming down on Monday morning. And yet again, it was supposed to be the CBS game of the week. Although last week was supposed to be a night game on Saturday night in Alabama and LSU. Nonetheless, it was the CBS game of the week. No go. Same this week. Ole Miss and Texas A&M postponed. So that's now 2 weeks in a row for A&M. Postponed. The question is, all right, if that's already happened on Monday morning, how many more of those are coming down the pike like last week? I hope not very many. Four games in the SEC last week were postponed.
Yeah, it's getting increasingly difficult with the caseload, and it doesn't look like it's going to get any better in, you know, in the next few days, right? We've, you know, the curve, we got this, you heard the term flatten the curve all the time. And the wave is high right now, so it's very concerning. And I hope, like you said, it's only Monday. You hope not to hear more good news, but it's kind of like you come to expect a certain amount each week now. So we'll see. Texas A&M, of course, is still in the hunt for big things for their season, right? And now these are two games. The
Absolutely.
SEC over the weekend announced that they'll now take the December 19th week. Is that right?
Yep.
December 19th,
and
which is
still,
the week of the
– Right, still the same day of the SEC championship
right.
game.
Right. So teams that would like to make up a game who aren't involved in the championship game could play that day. It's just, you know, this is what you have to do. But, of course, you ask the question, is the caseload going to be better by December 19th? It's going to be tough. These are all things that we have to try to wrap our arms around here.
A&M is 5-1 on the year. I mean, they got a lot to play for. I mean, think about it. I mean, these are two. Tennessee is a winnable game that just got postponed. Ole Miss is a winnable game. Could you talk about a 7-1 A&M team?
They're
going to be right in the middle of all
with a
this.
Win over Florida, right? So if Florida were to let's just say Florida plays Alabama in the championship game, which is possible, right? That's maybe the most likely right now.
Of course.
And Texas A&M could be sitting there saying we've lost one game, it's to Alabama, but we've beaten Florida.
Mm-hmm.
That's a pretty good case for big things.
No doubt. Ole Miss hung 59 on South Carolina Saturday night. It was a fun game. It was back and forth. It got away from South Carolina late, but it was back and forth. Lane Kiffin, he's something. And he was doing this at Alabama when he was the OC. He raises his hands and starts running down the sidelines before the ball's even thrown. It's amazing. Like, I don't know if you've seen this or not. It went viral. The long touchdown late. I think it was in the fourth quarter. And the guy is wide open now. And Lane Kiffin already has his hands up. He throws his notepad up in the air, and he's running down the sidelines. And the quarterback hasn't even thrown the ball yet. Just because he knows it's going to be a touchdown. It was like a, well, I don't know, 80-yard touchdown or whatever they end up scoring. But they hung 59 on South Carolina. And so much for, you know, coaches get a pass in this, you know, COVID-19 year. No, not in the SEC. Give me a break. South Carolina has parted ways with Will Muschamp. They didn't even wait. They went on and pulled the trigger over the weekend. So South Carolina will actually go there to Columbia and talk with Josh Kendall in the final hour and find out what's next for the Gamecocks. But that is the start of many coaches. If all these coaches think they're going to survive because of the odd year, well, good luck with that. Some of them will because of it, but as we're seeing, a lot will not. And South Carolina is a prime example.
Well, no doubt. And just to tie everything together, I can remember Lane Kiffin when he was on the Alabama sideline running their offense. He was doing stuff like that, right? Raising his arms as he knew the play was going to pop wide open. There's no question he's an outstanding offensive mind. And with that in mind, now that was the last straw for Will Muschamp. There's going to be a lot of talk of Hugh Freeze, but the reclamation project of Nick Saban with Lane Kiffin doing well at Ole Miss, I wonder what that does for Steve Sarkisian. He's another guy that I think you're going to hear in the mix for South Carolina. It would not surprise me if they took a hard look at him. He's got issues from the past, but if he can sort of make everybody feel like he's turned over a new leaf in terms of his personal issues, right? He had some alcoholism that he came out very vocal, I mean, publicly about and said, I had a problem. It cost him his job at USC. Kind of went away for a while. Now he's running Alabama's offense. That's going to be a very interesting coaching search.
Let's see. South Carolina has hired Lou Holtz and Steve Spurrier in the past. Who's a legendary coach that hasn't been in the game? You know, we can't do Mac Brown because Mac Brown's at North Carolina. You know, who's a guy out there that's just sitting there that had a lot of success that hasn't coached in a while? Maybe that's who South Carolina turns to. I'm trying to think. Who would that be? Anybody come to mind? And I'm not setting you up for I don't have an answer. I'm just saying South Carolina has done that.
Honestly, I think – and Ray Tanner, I guess, came out with some public comments and said
he's looking
for
an
offensive mind.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So that would fit Freeze and it would fit Sarkisian. My guess is Sarkisian would be the guy. but I that's just a gut feeling.
Maybe Rick Neuheisel?
That would be a surprise if he went that route.
Just trying to think of somebody who's, you know, big name, hasn't been coaching for a while. That's typical. You know, South Carolina gets to that point every once in a while, and then they hire that guy. Let's see, is anybody else I'm trying to – there's no Notre Dame coaches. Certainly don't want to go to Charlie, right? No, not going to bring back Charlie.
Get Urban Meyer.
No, that's not happening. Urban Meyer is that is Urban Meyer has been on the shelf for a year, year and a half now. No, that would be a hire that anybody should want. And it's a matter of can they talk him out of what he's doing now. I'm just talking about some guy that nobody's thought about in a while. Just got a text. Ryan Porth says Houston Nutt. There you go.
I don't know if Coach Nutt, with all due respect, has the accolades of Spurrier or
probably
or
not
Lou Holtz, but
no
national championship and almost legendary status coming back. I mean, because those were big stories. There's no question that when they got Holtz and Spurrier to sort of come out, they were both coming out of retirement, right?
Yep.
You used to hear that a lot with Bill Parcells, right? There was a rumor, heavy rumor, that Kentucky was trying to get Bill Parcells for a while around the same time. You know, several years ago, the years were starting to run together for me. But remember, you did hear Parcells a lot in that vein. I don't know if there's that. How many of those coaches are out there, though? Urban Meyer is an interesting one because he's not as old as those guys, right? He every time he's walked away, he's still a fairly young right. coach, relatively speaking,
for the most
who's
part,
put up
yeah.
so much
correct
in terms of winning.
I would say Les Miles, but there's no chance of that. He's at Kansas, and Les is so far out of sight, out of mind. Yeah, he is.
His
just,
stock is dropping.
Yeah, it's bad. All right, we'll come back. We'll talk with TD to kick off the second hour of Darren Donick and Chase. That's next.